Yakov Smirnoff is a Russian immigrant who came to America many years ago. He became a popular comedian all over the country. He talks about wandering one day into an American grocery store, and he was amazed by everything that he saw there. He says, "I saw something called powdered milk on the shelf, and it said that if you simply add water, you will get milk, and it's amazing. And then I saw something called powdered coffee. You simply add water and you get coffee, and I couldn't believe it. And then I saw something that said powdered orange juice. You add water and you get orange juice. It was phenomenal. But then I saw the most amazing and phenomenal thing of all. It was called baby powder. And I said to myself, what a country." Now, we all know that our great country is far from perfect. We have problems, both domestic and foreign affairs. But when we consider the freedoms and the opportunities and the possibilities, we all have to say, America, wow, what a country. And this is the weekend that we remember those who have given their lives in service to this country. Acts of patriotism abound. Flags will wave, bands will play, I hope. There are some of them getting wet, and that's what it is for. With all sincerity, we consider the words of the Baptist minister Francis Bellamy, who wrote in 1892, "I pledge allegiance to my flag and to the republic for which it stands, one nation indivisible with liberty and justice for all." 1892, we have been reciting that. And we mean it, and we want it to be true. Liberty and justice for all. We remember President Lincoln's prayer at Gettysburg on November 19th, 1863, that this nation under God shall have a new birth of freedom, and that government of the people, by the people, for the people shall not perish from the earth. We love America, and so we celebrate this weekend and in solemn remembrance pause to honor men and women who have sacrificed for us. Now, I'll make this very, very clear because I think that we can lose our focus. I grew up in Miami, which did not have a large military presence, but then I moved to Jacksonville in the junior high years, and oh my goodness, we're in the midst of the Vietnam War. There are Navy bases all around. All of my friends had fathers, brothers, cousins, uncles who were serving in the military, most of them in the Navy or the Marines, but that didn't matter. They were everywhere. I moved to Columbia, South Carolina, where Fort Jackson is located, and there's hardly anyone in Columbia that's not related to the military in some way because of that tremendous presence. Do you know how big Fort Jackson is? If you take Columbia, the entire city of Columbia, including Irmo and Lexington, which none of you hardly know anything about, but you pick it up and you move it over to Fort Jackson and you drop it down, you'll still have Fort Jackson all around there. That's how big it is. If you're going to enter into the Army, you're going to go through Fort Jackson or some other fort that's out in Kansas. I can't remember. Somebody will correct me. But Fort Jackson, what is it?
Leavenworth.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Okay. That will, you know. Fort Jackson, it's an amazing thing. And so I've known military people my whole life. I was not allowed to serve because of medical reasons, but I was an ROTC right up until they said thank you, but no thank you. And so I have a great heart for people, but I know men and women who came home and have lived out their lives, and they need to be remembered too, because every day that they put that uniform on, they became a target wherever they were. They gave of their lives. In just a couple of months, in the beginning of August, my nephew, who out of all of my nephews, and I have about 20 of them, is by far my favorite nephew, Stephen, serves with the South Carolina, National Guard, thank you. He repairs helicopters for the National Guard. He is an amazing young man. He has 5 children under the age of 7. Yes, well, he and Sarah helped. Sarah helped, I got to tell you. She helps with it. But he's going to be leaving in August for a 9-month tour of duty. 9 months he won't see his children. I know many of you spent more time when you were overseas, particularly if you served in the Second World War. You know that you go away. I met a man earlier in the week who was a tank driver, went through the Ardennes Forest, ended up liberating some concentration camps. Met with them over at the high school, and he told his story, and it was just amazing. He is a man who is a hero by every measure, And he talked about, when I left, I was gone for 3 years. He did not come home. 3 years. Yeah. I had a friend of mine in Auburndale. Her husband was a general. He left. She didn't hear from him for 2 years. Never heard from him at all because the way the things were going, just couldn't get word back and forth. And she said it was okay. We knew everything was all right. That's a sacrifice made for us. He came home, but it was made for us. And then I have a Marine friend of mine who was a pilot. And he said, you know, George, it's not so much that we need to recognize those who gave their lives. That's important. But don't forget, it was those that were left behind after those lives were lost that need to be remembered too. The families, the friends that were devastated when someone was killed overseas or in duty to our country. You see the level of sacrifice that we have? It's not enough just to say, well, you know, we'll remember, because we can never remember enough. We can never remember everyone. We want to remember. And today, there's a role in patriotism in the church has something of a rocky history. It seems strange to mention things like this in a place of worship where we're supposed to focus on God, to think about those who served in the military. And some churches have a real problem with that. I do not have any problem with it, and this church doesn't either. Because a patriotic call to be an American Christian is not the same as a call to faithfulness as a Christian American. Embracing the ideals of America does not a good Christian necessarily make, any more than embracing the life of faithfulness as a Christian makes you a good American. They are separate things, but you bring those together. It is important to remember that our faith and our patriotism are connected. It's often difficult to disassociate our political beliefs from our religious beliefs. That's why some family gatherings declare both topics off limits. We disagree, but we claim a common nation, a common flag, a commitment to freedom and justice for everyone. Christian churches have represented the conscience of America from the very beginning. Too often, we remain silent. We are told, oh, leave that in the church. Don't bring that out. Too often, we hide behind our veil of piousness and claim a higher ground. But the essence of Christian community is to be engaged in the world, to transform that world, to take what we do here and hold it up high as a beacon to the world that we believe in liberty and justice for all. It was Alexis de Tocqueville, the French statesman who studied American democracy back in the 1830s, who recognized the role of religion in America. And I love this quote. He wrote, I sought for the greatness and genius of America in her commodious harbors and her ample rivers, and it was not there. I sought for the greatness and genius of America in her fertile fields and boundless forests, and it was not there. I sought for the greatness and genius of America in her rich mines and her vast world commerce, and it was not there. I sought for the greatness and genius of America and her public school system and her institutions of learning, and it was not there. I sought for the greatness and genius of America and her Democratic Congress and her matchless Constitution, and it was not there. Not until I went into the churches of America and heard her pulpits flame with righteousness did I understand the secret and genius and power of America. Now, Tocqueville was correct. The secret behind this country is not in the political system or the economic system or the educational system, but the secret to this country runs deeper into the soul and the faith of the American people. Now, way back when, in the 8th century BC, Micah was one of the prophets. He's one of my favorite prophets because in seminary we had to translate the entire book of Micah. You remember doing that, Bill, having to pick something out of it? Yeah, we had to do the entire book of Micah from Hebrew into English. Yeah, that was a long semester, but anyway. But he was living in a time of tremendous transition as the prosperity of the nations of Judah and Israel were being threatened by an advancing power of neighboring empires. And Micah sees the coming destruction in the short term, but also offers this beautiful vision that pictures a time when all of the people of the world will live in peace and harmony. Listen to what he says. Instead of war as a way of settling disputes, we will seek God, and God will resolve all of our conflicts. That sounds nice, Micah. Wonderful, wonderful picture, but not very realistic, is it? Micah, not only did your prophecy not become real in your lifetime, but 2,800 years later, it has not become real in anyone else's lifetime either. Not that there's anything wrong with being a dreamer, but this is a complicated and violent world. Micah 4:1 says, in the days to come, the mountains of the Lord will be the highest mountains. He's talking about the temple becoming the highest of the mountains. But if you've been to Jerusalem, you probably know there are a lot of mountains that are bigger than the temple. Micah's not talking about moving the temple to a higher place, nor is he suggesting that God will make the ground under the temple somehow rise up so that it'll be higher than any of the other hills. If the temple is the place where God can be found, then could that be the key to peace and harmony and prosperity? One of my favorite scripture passages, 2 Chronicles, if my people, which are called by my name, shall humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then I will hear from heaven and will forgive their sin and heal their land. In the days to come, the mountains of the Lord will be the highest mountain. And then Micah gets into some detail in 6:8. He says, God has told you what is good, and what does the Lord require of you to do? But justice, and to love kindness, and to walk humbly with your God. Micah is saying, first, justice is something we do, working for fairness and equality, and things haven't changed since Micah's day, back when the rich and powerful were using their power to exploit those who are vulnerable. And when foreign empires threatened and resources went towards armament and fortification, there was less attention to the poor. Even back in Micah's day, people suffered. Second, love kindness. The Hebrew word here is hesed, which means much more than the English word for kindness. It means love. It means loyalty. It means faithfulness. And it is a key element that binds a relationship, whether it is a relationship with another person or a deep relationship with God. Love, kindness. And third, walk humbly with God. Carefully put God first and seek to follow God's direction first. And so this Memorial Day weekend, in parades and wreath-laying ceremonies, we hear the words that Jesus said, no greater love than this, to lay down one's life for another, for one's friends. Quoted in remembering men and women who died too young, too violently, in times of war and in times of peace. This year, with the U.S.-led coalition still in Afghanistan, still serving around the world, do you realize that there is a reality to this that should give you some heart? People that are experts tell us that there is a greater amount of peace in the world today than it's ever been in human history. Less war, less conflict, less violence today than there has ever been since any of you were born, your grandparents were born. Some of you have been around for a long time. That is something to celebrate. But there is no doubt that we owe that peace to a lot of people's sacrifice. People who will not come home to join with their children and their families. No doubt there's many who will be honored by Jesus' words. No greater love has this, to lay down one's life for one's friends. Combat veterans from all different wars on all different sides tell similar stories about strong ties and friendships formed among their comrades. And you hear all kinds of stories of brave soldiers who throw themselves on grenades to protect their buddies from the explosion, or a courageous medic who charges into a hail of bullets to pull a wounded comrade to safety. I've always been touched by those stories. What would make someone do such a thing? What would provoke such sacrifice and courage? I read an article recently from the Los Angeles Times. It was about Operation Anaconda, where the U.S. went into Afghanistan originally. And the reporters started with an account of the colonel's speech to the troops on the morning that the operation began. He said this, "You will never forget this. You will never forget that man or that woman on your right or your left. You will never forget the fact that you stood here in Afghanistan." And then he addressed the fears and anxieties of the young soldiers, most of whom had never seen combat, anxiety about how they would perform their duties under pressure. And he assured them, "You will be good because you will do it for each other." And as the day unfolded, Operation Anaconda did not go as smoothly as was expected. And one company ended up trapped and isolated in a mountain range. And within the first few minutes after that helicopter had dropped them off, they were under heavy fire and sustained many casualties. But it took 18 long hours for help to arrive to get them off of that ridge. And of the 86 members of the company, 28 were wounded that day. But none were killed, and none were left behind. When they were interviewed about their experience that day, their thoughts immediately turned to one another. Private Ricardo Miranda, age 20, was among the first wounded in the attack, yet continued to help move other injured soldiers to a safer place. Looking back, Miranda said, "I looked at my hand and my body and said, 'Wow, I got hit.' But it hurt more to see my guys getting hit. And living with these guys for so long is like building a brothership. We are a family. If one of them gets hit, it really hurts." Major General Buster Hengenberg summed it up when he said, "The soldiers that went in, they went in to get a buddy out. And we will always do that." The words of these contemporary soldiers have been echoed by veterans throughout the generations. When heroic figures like Private Miranda are asked about their actions, they always seem to respond with something similar to, "I wasn't thinking about anything except that those were my friends out there, and I had to protect my friends." Courage, sacrifice, commitment. It all begins in a friendship. It all begins in love. It's that understanding that leads people to recite Jesus' words this Memorial Day weekend. "No greater love than this, to lay down one's life for one's friends." Friendship and love are not weak human emotions. They are powerful forces that can move human beings to have the greatest courage in the most difficult times. Until fairly recently, Memorial Day did not have a lot of meaning for me other than that it was the day of my birthday. But when my family moved to Jacksonville, as I said, during the Vietnam War, and I became friends with so many Navy families in our church, my friends, my buddies, my girlfriends, all had brothers and fathers serving in Southeast Asia. It lost its clinical edge of just being a day. Now it had the face of people that I knew. Perhaps because of the spate of World War II remembrances, like films like Saving Private Ryan, which I believe is the greatest film ever made in history of the planet. It's the greatest film. And Life is Beautiful, to Tom Brokaw's best-selling book, The Greatest Generation, and even a recent Time magazine cover article. They feature the personal stories from soldiers who experienced war up close and personal, losing friends on the battlefield. Maybe because American culture is again mindful of our wars and members of our church with family members who are in harm's way this very day in wars around the world. And you're aware of the new and profound meaning of what this day really means. Last year, I was watching the 4th of July celebration on television, and it was taking place in the National Mall in Washington, D.C., and as the hundreds of thousands of people in D.C. began singing "God Bless America," suddenly the fireworks burst into the air miles away. There I was, sitting in front of a TV set with goosebumps and great pride for my country and for all of my friends and people that I've known who have served this country. In the fall of 1938, war was threatening, and Irving Berlin decided to write a song about peace. He wrote it. It really didn't go very far. Nobody seemed to be very interested in it, and he forgot about it. But then one of the managers for a local singer said, "Do you have anything that might work really well for Armistice Day 1938, when it would be celebrated?" And he said, "Yeah, I think I've got something in a trunk." And he went and he got it, and he brought it out, and he handed it to him. And later that week, a woman named Kate Smith introduced the song on a radio program. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know if you know what happened, but he had no idea that it was a hit. Nobody thought it was going to be a big deal. But people started calling at the first radio program, and there would be another one a couple of hours later, you know, as it goes across the country. And somebody said, "You've got to go get him. You've got to go get Berlin and let him see what this is." And so they found him at home. He was just doing stuff and dragged him down to the radio station with Kate Smith to do this next show. And he was completely taken aback. This Jewish immigrant who had written a song about God blessing America And whenever I hear the words, God bless America, I hear them as a prayer for America. God, make this country a blessing to you and to others. And God, make me a blessing. Maybe this year, Memorial Day, can be an opportunity for us to remember those who are willing to offer the greatest sacrifice on behalf of their country, on behalf of freedom, and to hear that God has told you what is good and what does the Lord require of you, but to do justice and to love kindness and to walk humbly with your God. Dennis McCarthy wrote an article for an editorial for the Los Angeles Daily News about a man named Brian Dooney, a science teacher in Chatsworth High School, who spent thousands of dollars of his own money and hundreds of hours of time memorializing those who had died in war. Brian Rooney has cataloged 8,600 memorials so far in 50 states, remembering the men and the women who died protecting America. Mr. Rooney's mission began in the jungle of Vietnam 33 years ago with a promise that he made to a dying soldier. Two simple words were whispered into the young Army medic Brian Rooney's ear as he leaned over a mortally wounded soldier, trying to read the name on his dog tags, and the kid said, "Remember me." And he died. And Rooney promised that he would remember that. He would remember him and the other soldiers. And so the promise grew into an obsession. He spends much of his time now cataloging memorials for those who have died in war, making sure they are cared for and that they are remembered. And that promise, it has been something that has been his driving force in his life. And what he has done is commendable. From the Revolutionary War to the present, he remembers those who gave their lives defending freedom for the rest of us. He said, "My mission is to bring humanity to every one of them." So I ask you, let's do that. Stand up. Let us take a moment to do the same thing this morning. Let us stand silently and remember those who gave their lives to protect and defend our freedom.